Dreamland, a program dedicated to an examination of areas in the human experience not easily nor neatly put in a box. Things seen at the edge of vision, awakening a part of the mind as yet not mapped, and yet things every bit as real as the air we breathe but don't see. This is Dreamland.
It is indeed. And I wasn't sure where my mic was there for a second. Hi, everybody. Welcome in. Good to have you. It is Sunday evening once again. Dreamland underway. A couple of heads-up items for you. I'm Art Bell. One heads-up. We were going to have Zachariah Sitchin on a regular syndicated program, Coast to Coast AM, but Zachariah Sitchin, because of events in Israel, will not be with us this coming week, but rather the following week. So look for Zachariah Sitchin, a lot of people waiting for him, 1 a.m. on Thursday morning, the 15th. That'll be on Coast, and I'm looking forward to it. Coming up shortly, Linda Howe, and then Dr. Chet Snow, back from France. We kind of get him once a year as he comes back from France, on past and future life progression and the possibility of multiple lives. A couple of other items. I would like to give out my World Wide Web address. It is a simple one, unlike many others. It is www.artbell.com/art/. That's it. A lot simpler than most of them. That's www, standing for World Wide Web, artbell.com/art/. And I also want to thank the gentleman who have that page up. It is one of the best pages on the web, and it gets constant attention. Also, the absolutely astounding pictures from Hubble. We have got what we think are the two best ones of all the ones sent to me. And they are on our bulletin board, entitled star1.gif and star3.gif. When you get into our bulletin board, you simply hit J space 11 and go to the section that says Hubble. You will find them in there, star1.gif and star3.gif, and they really are worth having. If you have an inkjet or laserjet printer, you can print them, and they are then of frameable quality. Creation at work. I've got an Associated Press story, and a lot of people, thousands, are seeing a face in the clouds. Of course, it's kind of a cosmic Rorschach test, but a lot of people claim they're seeing the face of Jesus Christ. I haven't seen it yet, and I've been looking. Maybe I just haven't seen it the right way. At any rate, tonight's show, in a moment, of course, Emmy Award-winning investigative journalist Linda Howe, who is at home in Philadelphia with what I understand is a fascinating report regarding some new alien footage, Roswell footage, I believe. And then Dr. Chet Snow on past lives and future lives, and you know I love that topic. So we'll be into all of that here in a moment. If you suffer from headaches, backaches, sports injuries, any kind of discomfort, to Philadelphia and Linda Howe. Hi, Linda.
Hi, Art. It's Socorro, not Roswell.
Socorro.
According to the cameraman. And a couple of brief updates before I get into the humanoid autopsy footage story.
All right.
Last Sunday, I interviewed a Red Bluff, California man who watched three strange-looking helicopter-like vehicles fly 50 feet above him and his growling dog.
Yes.
He said that all he could hear was a slow, whispering, whooshing sound.
He made a good little whooshing sound.
Right, and it was sort of...
That's right.
Afterward, I received several calls for two or three days from pilots who said even new helicopter designs which reduce noise aren't that quiet. So what were those objects? I continue to look forward to anybody's information on that issue.
All right.
And the Lassen County, California Sheriff's Office called me again about a third mutilated cow found on the Barton Ranch in Susanville. Tall grass that we collected from the first two mutilations a couple of weeks ago has been examined by W.C. Levengood, the biophysicist in Michigan. And Dr. Levengood told me this week that he found the same pattern of biochemical and biophysical changes that he has found in plants from other animal mutilation and crop circle formations that I've reported about on Dreamland for the last 2 years. His hypothesis is that an intense and complex energy was focused at the sites, but the technology and motive are still unknown.
All right, well, let's settle something then right now. This seems to me a good way to settle it. You know our two friends over in England with their chains and board, right?
Doug and Dave.
Doug and Dave. If Doug and Dave were to do their thing with a chain and board, would the kind of changes that Dr. Levengood found be apparent?
Absolutely not, he says. He says that the mitochondria changes in the cells would never be affected by simple physical force of feet and board.
Okay, that really is important, Linda.
Yes.
For people to understand, because, you know, Doug and Dave were only the beginning, and I'm sure that some crop circles have been created by Doug and Dave wannabes.
But certainly not all of them, and not worldwide.
And not with these biological changes.
Yeah, in the cells themselves.
Exactly.
Well, the humanoid autopsy footage from the alleged May 31st, 1947 UFO crash near Socorro, New Mexico, was in the news again, this time in Dusseldorf, Germany. Magazine publisher Michael Hesseman organized a conference last weekend to discuss the controversial story and to screen other Socorro footage and film that is beginning to emerge from a variety of sources. For the first time, an uncut 14-minute version of what is called the Socorro tent footage was shown.
Oh, boy.
Yeah, and in the audience was Bob Schell, editor of Shutterbug Magazine for the past 8 years, and the author of that first report, which we've discussed, that supported this autopsy film as being consistent with 1940s black and white high-speed film.
Now, everybody should know Bob Schell, who I interviewed on Coast, did photo analytical work for the FBI and for a lot of other people. He is not a lightweight.
That's right. He's been in photography and doing the magazine for 24 years and editor the last 8 years on Shutterbug. He knows a lot about film and cameras.
Right.
And yesterday, I interviewed Bob about what he saw at the Dusseldorf conference, including the unedited test tent footage.
And what you can see is a being that looks similar to the one seen in the autopsy, lying on a table, maybe it's a cot, in a dimly illuminated area, which may be inside of a tent. You can't really tell it's a tent, it's a dark area. There's an emergency lantern hanging directly over the table that the creature's on. There's two people behind the table, and for convenience, I'm just calling them medical technicians because that seems to be what they are. They're wearing white lab coats like a medical technician would wear. And the creature's not moving, at least not visibly moving. I do want to have someone look at this on the computer and see if any chest movement can be detected.
Does the head seem the same? Does the side seem the same? What?
The head, it's not very clearly lighted, but the head does appear to be the same kind of a creature. Based on the height of the two people behind the table, just guesstimating height, it looks like this creature is larger than the one we've seen in the autopsy that's out on video.
Taller? Longer?
Longer, taller, yes, that's right. And
do the feet stick out or the feet
stick out from the bottom. It's covered by a sheet, or a white piece of cloth anyway. The feet stick out at the bottom, the head sticks out at the top, and the right hand and part of the right arm stick out on the side.
And how many fingers and toes?
Now, the tape that we saw wasn't clear enough to count the toes. The feet are fairly well shattered anyway. The fingers hard to see, but I'd say 95% sure that there are six of them. I tried several times counting them, and it always looked to me like there were six of them. The head does have the big black eye covers like we've seen in the autopsy, so it appears to be the same kind of creature, but it appears to be a taller member of the same type of creature. According to Philip, he who has seen both autopsies as well as the 10 footage, the creatures in both autopsies appear to be about the same size. That one, again, comes from Roger. So we do have on film three out of the four creatures that were supposed to have been at the crash. It's really impossible to tell exactly what these people, these medical technicians, are doing to this creature. But it looks like what they're doing is removing a fairly large quantity of wet, dark cloth. It could be surgical gauze saturated with a dark fluid like blood. It could be some other kind of cloth that's already dark in color. But if you assume they're medical technicians doing some kind of medical procedure, then it looks like what they're doing is removing a wound dressing, preparatory to perhaps replacing it with fresh dressing. And if they are, in fact, removing a wound dressing, as saturated as the material appears to be from the way it flops around when they lift it up, I'd say that the creature had lost a considerable amount of fluid. But this is really speculation, because we really don't know exactly what they're doing. It's just an impression of what they're doing. The other piece of film that surfaced at Dusseldorf that I did see, because it surfaced the day I was there, is some film that was brought to Dusseldorf by an Italian man by the name of Bongiovanni. Mr. Bongiovanni received this film from a friend of his in Brazil, and this film shows a crashed disc-type flying saucer on top of a military flatbed truck. Wendell Steves, who was at the conference, said that this was a standard issue military flatbed from the 40s, and that the bed of the truck measures 40 feet long, in which case the saucer is about half, the diameter of the saucer is about half the length of the trailer, which means the saucer is roughly 20 feet in diameter. The first sequence on this film shows the saucer on the back of the truck being supported vertically by some scaffolding. Second sequence shows it inside of a hangar, and again, Wendell says the hangar has every resemblance to being a hangar at Wright-Patterson from his days of being there. And the third part of the sequence shows some large object being hoisted out from inside the saucer by chains. And this large, strange-looking object is identified as the power plant of the saucer. All I can say about this film is that it looks good, in the sense that if it's a fake, it's an extremely well-done fake. Mr. Bongiovanni says that he can get the original film. What he had with him in Dusseldorf was a videotape made from the film. And if he can, in fact, get the original film, then we can go to work on verification of it also.
Can you give a little bit more detail on the object that is on the film? Is it lens-shaped, egg-shaped? What is the shape and color?
It's the traditional saucer-shaped flying saucer, the one that looks like two saucers placed together. It's very shiny metal. It's a black and white film, so we can't tell color. But it's very shiny metal. It is smashed in on one side, apparently from impact. It has a rip in the surface skin on it also.
Can you see anything hanging out of where it's ripped?
The area where it's smashed in, you can see quite clearly the internal structure, which is a lattice work of what look like metal I-beams. The I-beams look like they're probably similar to the I-beams we've seen in Santilli's film in the debris sequence. A very complex lattice work of I-beams and a metal skin stretched tightly over it is my impression from looking at it. You can't really see inside the saucer because it's quite dark in it. And then again, there's this sequence of this very strange-looking object being hoisted up on the chain hoist. It's not something that looks like anything I've ever seen before.
And this new tent and UFO footage art might reach the United States in the next few weeks, and I'll keep reporting on this story as it unfolds.
Absolutely amazing. And now we find we've got a picture of the saucer itself. Holy mackerel, and maybe the drive for it.
Yep.
This is amazing.
Yes.
It's got to be one of three things in my way of thinking. Now, you see if which one you believe it is. It's either got to be a fraud done in 45 to 47, which seems very unlikely.
Right.
Two, the real thing. Or three, some horribly gone wrong government experiment. One of the three. Either way, no matter which you look at, it's a big story.
Well, I keep remembering Bob Shell telling me that he called up a former colleague from his days long ago at the Central Intelligence Agency, described the six-fingered, six-toed being in the Santilli autopsy footage, and that this old colleague now...
First-time callers, area 702-727-1222.
That's finally out. I think that more than one person off the record has been coming forth to me and to others saying this footage is real. So I think we should hold the door open that the biggest irony of all time, that we're being introduced to a non-human intelligence through autopsy footage, an old 1940s film.
All right. Linda, we're way short on time, so give everybody your contact information.
Right. The number to call if anybody has information on the animal mutilation, dark helicopter connection, or these strange vehicles in the air is my office tomorrow at area code 215-491-9840, or fax area code 215-491-9842. And for people who would like information about my documentary and book productions, please call the toll-free 800 number, 800-707-9993. That's 800-707-9993.
All right. Linda Howe, thank you. We'll look forward to talking to you next week, and the plot thickens.
Oh, it does, Art, and give my best to Chet Snow, because prophecy is a big deal now also, and they just had a big conference in Philadelphia last weekend.
All right. Linda, thank you. Linda Howe, Emmy Award-winning investigative journalist, and by the way, what I took out, I eliminated expletive deleted. She was referring to the government source, and she said his comments were, S-word, you mean it's out. So I wanted you to be sure you got the context of what was said. She actually spelled out the S-word, so I took it out. I just wanted you to know exactly what that was. Back in now, Dr. Chet Snow, and Dr. Snow has a doctorate, of course, in sociology as well as one in history. And a very good opening question for the doctor would be, well, I guess, first of all, welcome back from France and welcome back to Dreamland.
Thanks, Art. Good to be here.
An opening question would be, with two doctorates and a zillion different possibilities of areas that you could investigate and, you know, work you could do and no doubt teaching you could do and all the things you could do, how in the world did you get into the field you're in?
Well, sometimes you have to get hit over the head. And actually, something similar to that happened to me about 12 years ago. It was actually late 1982. Two things happened. I was working for the United States Air Force at that time as an administrative officer in their historical department, mm-hmm. out at Travis Air Force Base in California. And enjoying that very much, had really enviable lifestyle. I got to fly around the world and the country a lot and do very interesting things when two things happened. One was there was an industrial accident that happened to me at work that led me to, find that the medical establishment couldn't solve and cure everything that they and I thought they could do, and spent a good deal of time with a problem of what's called phantom back pain.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sure you've heard about that. And
oh, no, I have it.
Yeah, okay.
I fell off a pole, and L4 and L5 got compacted, and I've been sort of a back problem ever since.
Well, I had a major problem with that, and then the second thing that happened was, as I've told many people now, that my grandmother, with whom I was very close, and who nonetheless was 90-some years old, passed away. Only what happened with me was that she refused to stay dead. And, you know, Raymond Moody has written a whole book about this now, so it's become a fairly well-known, popular topic. He calls it reunions, and he says it goes way back in time, and you can sort of go to one of his places, he puts a fancy Greek name to it, and get in touch with dead relatives and things. Well, I didn't need any of that. What happened with me was in an Air Force VOQ unit, that's a visiting officer's quarter unit, on one of my missions, about 3 weeks after her passing, she suddenly just appeared in the room.
Mm.
Walked right out of a ball of light at the foot of my bed. And
In what form? I mean,
Looking very much like I had known her, only a few years younger, and looking obviously in much better health than I had last seen her before her passing. And in fact, what was fascinating to me, these encounters, these sessions, you could call them, I guess, went on for a couple of months, always very discreetly, always in appropriate times and places, when I was alone, when I wouldn't be bothered, and it didn't matter what time zone of the world I was in.
In
the Philippines, in Hawaii, I can't even remember how many different places, but always at an appropriate moment for me, and in each time she had something personal to tell me, something that was interesting in a family kind of way. And then, little by little, she began to give me some instruction, and I'll just say it really simply that we have a very limited concept of what we call the afterlife. It isn't just sort of you're here and suddenly you either go to heaven or to hell.
Mm-hmm.
That's very kindergarten style.
All right, just before you go on, I want to ask this. Did you question your own sanity at any point?
Oh, at the beginning, I sure did. And I think she knew that because not too long after these things started to happen, she actually recommended a clinical psychologist to me.
She did?
She named the woman and told me where she was, and it turns out that she was Dr. Helen Wambach, who was at Berkeley at that time, not very far from where I lived in Northern California, and was a specialist in reincarnational work. And so, obviously, I made an appointment right away, and that's how all this got started, because it was Dr. Wambach who more or less coined the whole concept of future life progression. She was one of the pioneers in that area.
So when you told her this, what did she say to you?
Well, I didn't tell her it right away, as you can imagine.
Okay.
I called her up, and I didn't say, my grandmother who died 3 months ago gave me your name and address. Not
right,
quite.
Right.
She gave me her name and a basic address, and then someone actually came to me a few days later, just an acquaintance, started telling me about Dr. Helen Wambach in Berkeley, and of course it didn't take too long for me to figure out that was the Helen that my grandmother had been mentioning. So what I said to her was that I had been recommended by a very highly placed source. I remember that very well. Highly placed source. And Helen Wambach had a wonderful sense of humor because later when I told her this, the whole story, of course, she laughed and remembered that first situation.
I'll bet. So you sort of snuck up on it with her.
I snuck up on it with her, and in fact what happened was she suggested to me, I told her that I was having some problems in my career and this back injury was bothering me and that I wanted to know more about her work, and also that I had been recommended to her. She had been recommended to me, I should say. And so she said, well, let's see. Let's do a regression and, of course, find out if there's some history, some background to any of this.
Mm-hmm.
So this started essentially a two-year relationship that ended when she passed on from a heart attack rather suddenly. But in that time, we did, I would guess, maybe 25 or 30 regressions and ultimately progressions, because I went to her not knowing she was dealing with this future stuff at all. That only came out after we had worked together for a while. And in the initial sessions, I found that in fact, I had known my grandmother before several times. In fact, that she had been a close family tie to me, maybe even more than some of the other members of my personal family today. That may be why she came back to me instead of some of the others. And there were some things that needed to be ironed out that came out clearly in these sessions. And that basically she came back to remind me that before I had been born, I had kind of made an agreement that I wouldn't spend my whole life just working in dusty Air Force records, which, although by today's terminology, I guess we're finding out disappear anyway, especially when congressmen want to find them, right?
So it would seem. I'm curious, very curious about this. What did she tell you, and what did you find out about the very nature of life after death?
Well, clearly the first thing was that, surprise, surprise, you don't just disappear. And it's not just a big sleep. That very much, as I later learned in the near-death experience report, you have this incredibly wonderful sensation of being out of the physical form, although you feel you're still in your body. And yet, if you look around, you can find where your body is in most cases. And you are in, and the interesting thing she said was her reaction was, I'm trying to get it right. I'm not nearly as pretty as I thought I was.
Well, I would imagine if you were old, frail, and ill when you passed away, it would be relief to be out of the physical body.
Right, but the whole feeling was, in a sense, that it's like you disassociate a little bit from the physical form, and yet you know you're you, and you're still very much yourself. In fact, all of a sudden, all the ailments and ills and pains are gone, and it's
all right. So you're suggesting this is a period of consciousness and awareness.
That's right. And then essentially she said that she was very quickly, she didn't go through all the stages, as far as I could tell, of what near-death experiences go through. She said for her it was very quickly, almost like a flash of light, and she found herself no longer involved with where she had been in the hospital and that kind of thing, and that she was initially like high above the earth and could see out to the whole universe. And then it was almost like thought, as Edgar Cayce said it this way, thought becomes thing. And where she would think is suddenly she could sort of be there watching it.
You have not yet seen, I know because we talked before the show, the photographs just taken by Hubble, 7,000 light years away. The actual creation process underway, stars being born, these 7 trillion or 6 trillion mile long gaseous clouds birthing stars. It's the most incredible thing you've ever seen in your life. And I wonder if when we die, if in some relationship with our universe, we get to understand and behold these things.
Well, I think I can answer that. You not only get to behold and understand such things, she also said that suddenly she was inside a snowflake, and that was a universe just as big and brilliant as being outside watching the Earth.
That's an interesting comment. There may be, I suppose there are, many universes of sizes.
And yes, that's right. And size is very relative, isn't it? It really
sure
isn't what we think.
It sure is. Our Earth, relative to what's around and out there, is but a speck.
Yeah, yeah.
Barely detectable speck.
That's right. And at the same time, it's a speck, and yet what she was saying was that one outside of the body can fill all of that in an instant of thought. And that, I guess, is something like knowing the mind of God, you might say. She, by the way, was a Methodist and then a Baptist. She was the daughter of a Methodist preacher and married the son of a Baptist minister. So that gives you some concept
yes.
to where she started out from.
Well, there are a number of things that I don't understand about the kind of work you do. In other words, if she was conscious and aware after death, then at some point we move from that to another life.
That's right.
And so then it's a sort of at least a partial or conscious erasure.
Not exactly.
Well.
There is almost like an agreement to let go, and a sort of an understanding that almost like an actor in a play has to take on all of the characteristics of the role of the character they're going to play, but then when they go home at night, they're the actor, they're not that character. Well, sometimes you get so much into your character while you're doing the play that you begin to take on actual thoughts and characteristics and formations of that character, and that hangs on with you a certain period of time, but as a consummate actor, when you're finished, when that play has done its Broadway run, let's say, well, you're going to start preparing a new one. So there is some in-between time, you might call it, between the two. Now, what she was telling me was she was still very much involved with her identity as who she had been here, and that is, in a sense, what brought her back to me. I guess she thought of me. I had been thinking very strongly of her after her passing, and essentially she wanted to let me know that, first of all, that she was fine and she was all right. And this is one of the things that loved ones often need to know. And a lot of communication, more or less, is really for this purpose.
All right. What I want you to do, we've got to take a quick break
sure.
here. But when we come back, what I would like to know is how you are so sure, so positive that experience you had with your grandmother was, in fact, your grandmother and not some unknown segment of your own mind settling out with itself, so to speak. So anyway, we'll be back in just a moment. You're listening to Dr. Chet Snow on Dreamland. I once had a cat. This is going to sound stupid to a lot of people. I don't care. I once had a cat named Yesu. Yesu was my closest friend. And Yesu died in my arms. And there are times when I have felt this cat's presence around me. Now, I have no way of knowing, really, whether this presence that I feel are the memories kept alive in my mind and the longing that I still feel for this pet of mine that I was so close to. And so, Dr. Snow, I'm going to ask you, in essence, the same question with regard to your grandmother.
Sure.
How do you know? What part of this was so real and so certain, or what anecdotal proof is there that your grandmother was not a figment of your imagination?
Well, a couple of things. Of course, how can you have hard physical evidence of something that isn't a physical phenomenon? That's obvious and clear. But two things stand out to me. One was that there was a consistency about these contacts, these sightings, these appearances, these times, I guess you could say, we had together. They went on for several months, and it was a fairly regular thing. So it wasn't like a flash of light and then suddenly, oh my gosh, that's my grandmother, I'm thinking of her. I actually did have somewhat of an experience like that when my own mother passed away. Many years before, actually, I lost my parents when I was only in my 20s. And that was, I don't know, except that I felt very clearly, closely, it was her. With my grandmother, this went on for some time. The information that she kept giving me included things that I couldn't possibly know about.
For example?
I'll give you a list. I didn't even know it. Nobody knew it. This little Baptist lady. And she didn't want my aunt to see these books. So she told me they would be in the linen closet and they would be for me, and that's why she'd come to me to tell me to pick them up, please, and not show them to my aunt.
That would do it for me.
Well, they were there.
They were there.
One day there, and the weirdest thing is, Art, I actually forgot that that's what she told me until we started going through the apartment and my aunt said something about the sheets and the towels, and then it was like, oh, my God. And then I thought, oh, well, what do I do? And I said, yeah, okay, I'll take some of those. And went in there, and there were about a half a dozen paperback books of various spiritual topics, including faith healing, and a book on Edgar Casey, as I've mentioned, the medical psychic, Olga Worrall, a very famous healer, Ruth Montgomery books, a very interesting little selection that I still keep as a, you know, my one of my most treasured memories. And the final thing was, the last time she came to me, which was about 3 or 4 months after this all started, she came to say goodbye, which isn't something that you might just think in your mind. And she actually looked younger at that point than when I had ever known her. And I don't think I'd ever even seen a picture of her at this age, which about, and then she, I asked her how old she was, and she said, it's when I got married, and that's the age that I always like to think of myself.
Yeah, I wonder if in the afterlife we start out at the age we die and begin to get younger until we're born again.
Well, what she said to me, and I asked her a little bit, not quite that way, but she said to me, we can be the age we want to be until we choose to release this image.
Really?
And the body's an image, from the spirit's point of view.
How long does one remain in such a state, quickly, because we're about at the top of the hour here?
Anywhere, I would say, anywhere from a minute to 100 years.
That's quite a span.
It depends on your need and the illusion that you have to keep creating.
Well, it seems to me at the moment of rebirth, consciousness is mostly sacrificed. And so I would think people would not easily give that up. But that's, of course, a very mortal, earthly perspective. Dr. Snow, stand by. We'll get right back to you. Relax for about 7 minutes and stay right there. From this mortal perspective, why you want to, you hang on to consciousness, seems to me, long as you can. We'll be right back soon. The future. All right, once again, Dr. Snow, are you there?
Yeah, hi, Art.
Good, Chet. If I might call you Chet, is that all right?
Of course,
we've known each other a long time. You are moving, are you not, to Sedona?
Actually, we bought a house in Sedona last year and, in fact, are on our way to sort of claim it after having been in Europe most of this year. I was working on a new book over there, and, of course, in the summertime, we spend 3 weeks or so to a month in England researching the fascinating crop circles each year. And so I'm sure some of your listeners saw the 2020 segment that was recently on.
Yeah.
And I'm the guy in the pink hat with the dowsing rods.
Oh, all right. So you were up. Gee, I missed you. And I did see that. I'm going to have to go back and review it.
If you have a video, go back and look for the guy in the pink hat, and I have dowsing rods, and I'm going through it with my dowsing rods. They cut out the interview. They only interviewed Richard Andrews and a couple of the biggies that were there, of course. That's more or less full-time for them. But we always spend some time there, and we're very happy to show some of those in the various lectures and seminars that I give around the country, because I find that this is truly one of the great mysteries, and to me it actually has a very spiritual content to it.
I'm very interested in the nature of time. Now, one of the things you have researched is future lives.
That's right.
It is possible, in other words, to take somebody into a hypnotic state and progress them into some life they have yet to live, correct?
That's right. That is the consciousness aspect of it. All of this, of course, is in my book, Mass Dreams of the Future, which I wrote and using some of the techniques from Helen Wambach, whom I was talking about earlier, and which we'll put in the address a little later. We have available and would love to have people get in touch with. It's quite a reference book because it not only goes into the future life progressions of both individuals and groups and talks about the farther ahead future, like 100 years from now or 300 years from now, but it has a whole section on what are the ancient prophecies about the near-term future. We're going into
a very good friend. That's what I want to talk about. A very good friend of mine is Gordon Michael Scallion.
Right, and I know Gordon Michael also, GMS as he likes to be called.
Yes, he sent me a special bulletin last week, which is truly frightening. The Ring of Fire right now is absolutely alive. We've got 6 or more active volcanoes, earthquakes all over the place. Gordon Michael Scallion seems to feel the final cycle may have begun. Now, that will result, as you well know, if you know GMS,
yes,
in massive earth changes. And I would think that through the process of future life progression, one might get a look at the kind of thing that Gordon is talking about, and so that is the question. What do you know?
Well, actually, the whole first chapter of Mass Dreams of the Future, as any of my readers that are listening to you know, talks in some detail about those experiences that seem to start around 1996 with a major set of events in 1998 to the year 2000, and then actually some that continue on after the year 2000, up till around the time of 2012.
Do you know of events of the magnitude that GMS talks about?
Well, I was progressed in that time period. It's very hard to take people into that time period, by the way. There does seem to be like a sort of a barrier that may be in our subconscious that keeps most people out of there. It's why people like GMS are so special to us, because they do give us a picture of what may be going on there. And remember, this is all still conditional, and I think that's very important, and I think he would agree with me on that.
He would.
He would, but
he is beginning to narrow it.
Yes, I've heard that. I haven't been in touch with him since we've been back. We've only been in this country about 2 weeks. We literally came back for the Prophecy Conference in Philadelphia. I hope we'll get a chance to get into that, because there were some very sobering reports, and
yes,
I wanted to tell your listeners that out of this conference.
I'd love to hear about that, and it really does fit right in. And look, I'm just a talk show host, and I'm not a researcher, but I deal with the news on a daily basis. Every single day I'm deep into it, and there is a kind of a quickening going on, doctor, socially, economically, politically, every arena you can think of. Things are quickening faster and faster and faster. Events are occurring at a faster pace. It is definitely as though we are headed toward an event of some sort.
We're going into a whole series of events, or sequence of events.
Yes.
Edgar Cayce and all the great prophets like to talk about sequence of events.
Yes.
And what Gordon Michael Scallion is talking about is very much what I saw in Mass Dreams of the Future. We called it the lighting of the Ring of Fire. That was the term I use in my future vision. And it does have to do with these volcanoes. And there are a lot more going off under the water than are above the water. And we're just getting more information on that. There's been a new island sighted off of the Tonga area in Southwest Pacific.
That's right. I heard about that.
And there's been some that haven't formed islands yet because they're more the oozing type. But they actually saw that there were like thousands of these off of the west coast of South America.
Well,
these are having a very distinct effect even on our climate. As I sit here and tell you,
it's true.
We need to be prepared for a very cold winter across the northern part of the United States this year.
Hmm. The number of hurricanes this year, Gordon forecasts those. Gordon, unfortunately, from my way of thinking, is hitting it right on the money, disturbingly on the money. The threatened eruption of Etna, for example, and Vesuvius,
That's right.
I saw CBS report on Vesuvius.
That there's new earth tremors around Vesuvius, and that is very, very important, because in the sequence of events, if Vesuvius goes before there's significant earthquakes in Japan, it will mean almost like a jump start. And I would think that that's even more serious than the worst-case scenarios that I have seen with people. That normally the sequence begins with India, interestingly enough, goes through Japan, almost ricochets around the world toward Vesuvius and then Martinique, and then North America, and particularly the upper northwest coast of America and the Los Angeles area, those two places, Washington State and Los Angeles.
That is nearly identical to the GMS predictions. Now,
why we get along so well, because I was seeing these dreams back in the 80s, and then he got involved in the same thing and was seeing them again without having ever seen my work, I'm sure. We've talked about this. These independent corroborations are, well, they're a little scary, I agree.
All right. You went to the Prophecy Conference. Here, I suppose, we had a gathering of those who say they are prophets and have visions. What came from that?
Well, this was called together by Lynn and Lori Toy. Lori Toy has been a channel and who worked with the I Am America map.
Oh, yes, I've interviewed her.
Okay, and so she called this together. There were, I believe, 12 of us. Probably the most important person there was Danny and Brinkley, who's had several near-death experiences,
mm-hmm.
and others, Tuita, who works with, she calls it the Ashtar Command.
Right.
Norma Milanovic, who's well-known in her work, and also myself and some others. So I think, and a couple of people from the Native American tradition, Robert Ghostwolf out from the West Coast. What I felt was the most serious thing that came out of the conference was that the prophets are saying, wake up, to the world. Wake up to the world. Wake up not only to Earth changes and to the real need of the Earth to go through a period in which there will be increasing turmoil from our point of view, but from the Earth's point of view, this is a necessary readjustment, you might say, and a necessary cleansing. But also to wake up to our spiritual reality. And maybe that's hard to put forward in our society today, but I think it's really, my grandmother even was saying this to me. We need to wake up to who we are as eternal souls, as eternal spirits, however you want to define that, and that's not a religious thing of one religion or another. Ultimately, they all come together when you leave the body and you look at where you've been and you do a life review, as they call it, as Danian says. I've gone through that review a couple times. I'm starting to get it right. He's a very funny guy, by the way.
This is in no way to belittle anything you're saying, but perhaps bolster it in a strange sort of way. I have a hard time buying what any single individual says, but week after week, I do interviews with credentialed people like yourself, Lord Michael Skyen and a zillion others, and collectively there seems to be a single message about the coming changes, and that is extremely impressive to me. You know, I am a collector of evidence. I'm not necessarily a believer, because I have not seen the things that you and others have seen. But as I listen to so many like you, you all seem to be saying the same thing, and there is a collective message, and that is very, very important and impressive.
And urgent. That's what came out of this conference.
Yes, and urgent.
Yeah. And let me just say, if people are interested in finding more out about that, they can send me a self-addressed stamp envelope for it when we do my name and address. Also, I'm sure that the I Am America has an 800 number that I don't know, but they can call the 800 information.
Mm-hmm. Well, what would you I ask this of everybody who says it's urgent, it's coming soon, whatever it is. What do you advise people?
Well, I think that what I advise people first is to really do a thorough house cleaning in your own mind and body and self, and start to begin to, you know, now's the time to get rid of all of the
baggage,
yep, and the self delusions that we carry around, and start to really begin to think about what is serious for you, what is important and real for you in life, and you know, that's an important process to work on. I recommend to people to start getting into some form of meditation or prayer on a regular basis. It's been well documented now in groups around the world that meditation in a collective sense can reduce violence, even random violence. Mm-hmm. And we all know that this random violence thing is increasing, just as the time pressures are increasing.
You've just spent a lot of time in France. Here in America, increasing does not do justice to what's going on. I mean, it's just flat out of control. What's going on in Europe, Doctor?
Well, I hate to tell you this, but the things that we see in America, now I've just been back a couple weeks, so it's hard to get a real handle on it, but here I'm near Washington, D.C., where you'd think, my God, it would be awful. There are more violent acts of social disruption taking place weekly in the country of France that I've seen over the last 6 months than anything in this country going on.
All right.
They're on the brink of a civil war within their own society, having a lot of it having to do with civil rights problems and massive unemployment. They have 11 to 12% to 15% unemployment.
All right, Doctor, hold on just a moment. We'll be right back to you. And you know, I've heard rumblings of civil war following the assassination of Rabin in Israel. And that was an interesting answer. I am a keen observer of what's going on in this country. I flipped on the local news before I came in to the show tonight. And it was a triple murder, I think, and a double murder, and another murder. It's like they had the murder stories just lined up. People blazing away at each other and killing each other in the city adjacent to me in Las Vegas. And Las Vegas is no different than any other city. Look around you, folks. It definitely is quickening. Many of you health-conscious folks are familiar with antioxidants and their amazing health benefits. Now, vitamin C is probably the most famous of these. UCLA scientists found that antioxidant vitamin C can help avoid cancers, strokes, heart attacks, increase life expectancy an average of 5 years.
We've got North American Trading's offer in 799. Back now with Dr. Snow. Whether it's France, then, or the U.S. you're looking at, it is well to be calling for people to meditate and people to get spiritually together and all the rest of it. But if I were to be a dispassionate judge of whether it's going the good way or the bad way right now, I'm sorry, Dr. Snow, but clearly it's going the wrong way. In other words, if our behavior is going to either lead us to the path of the gigantic changes or avoid them because of our spiritualism, we're doomed.
Well, doomed is not the right word in any case. And I certainly don't believe that it's doom. And as I say, having had the experiences I've had not only with my grandmother, but now with working with literally thousands of individuals in both the future progressions and their past life regressions, I've come to realize that this is not the end of the world, no matter what.
Well, happens. No, perhaps not.
It may well change our civilization. Yes, that's very likely.
Well, if you look
I say
at
in my book, three ways are likely to go the way of the dodo.
Doctor, if you look at your book or Lori Toy's map or Gordon Michael Scallion's map, you can say it's not the end, but for millions, if not billions of people, it will be the end.
It will be a transition, Art. Very important distinction.
Well,
Now, I realize from a purely materialist point of view that that may be how it's seen by some people. But the truth is, from my point of view, and that's what I'm trying to get across to people, that we are much more than any one life or any one body. And
okay.
All of the great spiritual teachers have taught us this. You know, it was written out of Christianity, but that was several hundred years after Jesus walked the earth. So
that's an important point. At one point, Christianity embraced the idea of a rebirth, correct?
A human rebirth. That's
human
right.
Rebirth.
Not transmigration, not going into animals or anything, but
human rebirth. When was that specifically written out of Christianity?
It was specifically written out in 500 and something at a council that took place in Constantinople, where the emperor was very much also the leader of the church, and he was influenced by his wife, who had been a prostitute and had killed a whole bunch of people to get her way into power. And she didn't want the idea that she might have to come back and, in the light of Christian teachings, own up to what she had done. So she said, nope. That's the doctrine is that you can be saved on your deathbed as long as you believe in Jesus and say, I'm saved, that's it, and declare it to a priest. And so that is what they declared. The interesting thing is that the Roman Catholic bishop, or the Roman bishop, was in jail, and he never signed the document. So it's a kind of funny thing. In the Vatican, they don't put it out publicly.
Sort of like the 16th Amendment, which a lot of people say never was ratified. All right, Dr. Snow, stay right there. Break time, bottom of the hour, from an area very near Dreamland, this is Dreamland.
From the Kingdom of Nine. You're hearing Dreamland with Art Bell. To participate in the program, call toll-free 1-800-618-8255. 1-800-618-8255. First-time callers, area code 702-727-1222. Or the wildcard line at 702-727-1295. This is the CBC Radio Network.
It is indeed Dreamland underway. Dr. Chet Snow, just back from France, is my guest, a doctorate in sociology and history, and man who's talking to us about, evening, prophecy, which is a fascinating area, based on future life progression, and worrisomely in agreement with a lot of other people who have recently predicted near-term events.
And we'll get back to them in just a second. GMX water conditioning, magnetic water conditioning. Only once, with copies right now. Call 1-800-4060-GMX. That's 1-800-4060. To Dr. Chet Snow. Doctor, are you there?
I sure am.
All right. Before we go to the phones, which we must soon do, I've got a couple of fax questions from Jody in Hawaii. If people can reincarnate and grow in each life, can they reach the stage where they do not have to reincarnate and can retain their consciousness, literally becoming immortals in a sense?
We go through cycles. The human cycle is one of parts of much larger cycles, apparently. And the answer to that is, yes, people do reach a stage that they have a choice about reincarnating in the earth plane as human beings or not. Many of the spiritual traditions, like the Buddhist religion, and all talk about this. And some of these very enlightened beings, because you can imagine that you'd have to be pretty wise and have pretty well got it down by that time. And what you have to get down is the law of love more than anything else. They voluntarily agree to come back and help teach until everyone who's on, we'll call it this life wave, this sort of wave of souls here, has a chance to reach that point. And others choose for their reasons to go on and experience the life force in a whole other dimension that is really beyond our ability to even conceive, I suspect.
Are there any new souls? I mean, it's the age-old question. If there is reincarnation, then how can we account for the increasing numbers of people and souls? Where do they come from?
Two things. Edgar Cayce said that basically the souls that are here on the earth plane and going through the human experience all were formed together. There are new souls being created for other systems in this universe and other parts of this physical creation. The reason that we have more now, or seems to have more now, is two. One is that souls choose to come back at varying intervals, and the intervals are growing shorter. And they have been growing shorter and shorter in the last several hundred years as we're coming up to the end of a certain number of cycles, and you might call it a graduation or a harvest is what I call it, what I was given in my book about this. And the second thing is, and this is a concept that is out there, and it does seem to be true, I've had some experience with this myself, is that we have at certain times, as we go through our evolution, the ability to incarnate in more than one body. And especially when more bodies become available, as when population goes up due to medicine, due to science, due to all the positive things about our civilization. And, you know, I don't think it's all negative. I think we have to applaud humanity for some of the things that we have done here on this earth. And so I'm not a Luddite or...
You're right, it's not all bad.
You know, it's not all bad. There are bad things about certain parts of it. But anyway, so actually some of us, and this seems to be the case of many people in the Western world, are really experiencing 2, 3, maybe 4 lifetimes at once right now.
That's something to think about, and it would account for the increasing number of souls, I suppose.
Well, not souls, but increasing number of humans here.
Humans. Well,
a soul sharing several bodies.
I've ruminated about this, and at times I've thought there are people roaming the planet now who damn near seem soulless. In other words, human life is worth nearly nothing. People who would go into a 7-Eleven and take what money was there, now will take the money, and just for the pure joy of it, or because they want to take life, or because they don't care about life, they'll shoot the guy. They'll take his money, and then they'll shoot the guy when they don't need to. These are people, it seems to me, almost without souls, as I think of them.
Well, there may be something along that line. One of the prophets at our convention was saying that there has been something, she could only see it as a wave of evil that has been sort of loosed here for testing in the last few years, and it has actually accelerated. And this is very eerie because, Art, this was, 10 days ago? She said that it was unleashed for the month of November. That there would be violent acts that would catch everyone's attention in the month of November around the world.
Well, it's got my attention. Let us take a few phone calls. I want to remind people anywhere east of the Rockies, that's the one number we haven't managed to get out. If you're east of the Rockies, the number is 1 800 1-800-825-5033. 1-800-825-5033. West of the Rockies, you're on the air with Dr. Chet
Hello
Stone.
Hello there. This is Fritz from Phoenix.
Hello, Fritz.
Well, Doctor, we have come a long way from Maury Bernstein, Brady Murphy regression back in 53.
Yes, now, absolutely.
Now, over the last 10 years, a broad question has been talked about. A lot of incredible incidents happen on this planet, like the Challenger explosion, the German wall coming down, communism disintegrating, Oklahoma bombing. How come nothing has been predicted in laboratory conditions?
All right.
I'm not sure that you can predict things in laboratory conditions. The way the unconscious works, the way that our mind works, the person has to have two things going on. You have to have a certain detachment from what's happening, and the mind has to be kept interested.
What about this psychomantium business?
Well, Dr. Moody's work with the psychomantium isn't laboratory conditions either, but what it is it's creating a space in which someone can get in touch with people who have gone on, who've made their transition.
But it is closer to a controlled experiment.
Yes, I suppose so, in that he has put together a certain number of physical attributes to, like, certain things in a room and a chair placed at a certain angle.
Exactly.
And is getting pretty good success with this, but my grandmother didn't wait for all that. She came on her own time.
I suppose your experience settled your mind, didn't it?
Well, in terms of that, and then not just that experience, but a whole series of experiences since then. As I say, working with literally thousands of either individual clients or in the regression progression seminars that I do around the world, and I've been doing this now for almost 10 years, of these seminars, trying to help people to get in touch with that part of themselves and actually taking like a Gallup poll of the subconscious.
That's
what Mass Dreams of the Future is all about.
Was your grandmother a ghost?
No, because she was following through the normal process. A ghost is someone who gets stuck. And actually, their soul may have gone on, but the energy is like, think of it like a tape loop that keeps playing and playing and playing and playing.
Oh, isn't that interesting? That comment is really particularly interesting because of the facts I've got here. And somebody said exactly that. That is our life, or could it be something like a tape loop, endlessly playing, again and again and again, forever.
Well, that's what a ghost gets into, and one can help the energy to dissipate. And I do that kind of work privately occasionally. It's not really what I'm known for or seek to be known for. But there are sometimes when these energies, you can move into a house, for example, and it's going on there,
right,
and it has nothing to do with you. And so, you know, you need to have that released. But the real thing about our lives is it's not like they're just a tape loop. They're a spiral.
Are these things that we know as ghosts, are they the souls, are they actual souls that are trapped or confused, or is it sort of a reflection of what was that won't go away?
More the second than the first, although there are a few cases that the person's emotions and were so disturbed by what they went through in their life that actually a part of their, let's call it their life force, has remained.
Uh-huh.
It's stuck
All
in
right.
a place.
East of the Rockies, you're on the air with Dr. Snow. Hi.
Hi, this is Jeremiah from Evans, Colorado.
Yes.
I got a couple questions for your guest. I'd like to know what his feelings are about chronic deja vu and what his beliefs are about extreme visions of the future.
All right. Chronic deja vu first. Reflections of prior lives?
I guess what he's referring to is that he can't go anywhere, someone that can't go anywhere without being bombarded by sensory input that seems to come from the past.
That's right.
Right? And what I would say to that is that probably this person we have that psychic veil for a reason. It's almost like a baby. A baby stubs its toe many times before it learns to walk. So if you keep thinking of stubbing your toe, you'd never learn to run, you'd never learn to function in life. So someone who keeps getting these instant flashes and they are too strong for them needs to do some work on that. You can build a boundary that will help you to work with that. In other words, your veil is too thin.
All right. He also mentioned intense visions of future events. Now,
well, I think it goes with the other.
Yeah, it does. I had one. Mm-hmm. In my whole life, I've had one. And when it came, I couldn't control it. And without going into details and boring you with the details, it was a near-term thing where I was sitting and wave after wave, almost like ocean waves washing over me,
yep,
told me somebody was going to hit my car.
Right.
Went to the window, looked, no problem, sat back down, watched the news. More waves, overpoweringly so. And
yep.
It forced me to get up, and I went over to the window, and I watched a guy walk down the walkway, get in his car, put it in reverse, hit my car. And it so frightened me that I fell to my knees. And I got up just in time to yell out the window, "Hey, I saw that."
So you,
I've got your license number.
Right. So you took action. And that's the key to having these kind of, you know, your case was a very good one because you took action. That's the key that I would say to the young man who phoned. When you have these overwhelming, powerful future visions, especially if they're of a negative character or nature, you need to take some kind of action in your life, whatever it is, even if it doesn't change what's happening. It's very important that you reassert your free will, your control over who you are and who your life, what your life is about. I do not believe that we are just puppets on strings in all this. If I did, I'd have moved to that farm in Canada I saw in the book and forgotten the rest of it.
So nothing is preordained.
It is, think of it like a huge river just going down to the sea. The flow of the river is sort of there, and gravity makes it go downhill. But yet, the river can meander, it can go right and left, it can flood, it can drought, it, you know, can go into a stream, etc. All of those are the free will that we have.
Or there can be a gigantic earthquake causing even the Mississippi for a time to go backwards.
And change course. And that also can happen, and it can, and that can happen within one's life.
All right. Doctor, stay right there. We'll be right back to Dr. Snow and your calls in a moment. We all know that information... Bit of a promo here. Next week, I'm going to be taking Sunday off, and we're going to do a replay of one of the best of our Dreamland series, and we have a zillion of them now in the cans. However, coming up November 5th, make that November 19th, rather... Whitley Strieber, author of Communion, and so much more. You're not going to want to miss that. That'll be the next live Dreamland, November 19th. Back now to Dr. Snow. And, Doctor, we need to take a couple of quick calls, if we can.
Can I give them my post office box first?
Of course.
Post office box 1738 in Sedona, S-E-D-O-N-A, Arizona, 86339. And if you send me a self-addressed stamped envelope, I'll send you information about these topics, and maybe a little later we'll get into how they can order my book and my audio tape and a new videotape that I'm bringing out of my prophecy results at the prophecy conference.
All right. I am curious about one thing. On Lori Toy's map and Gordon Michael Scallion's map,
mm-hmm.
Where is Sedona?
Sedona is going to be a seaport. Right at the edge.
Right at the edge.
Sedona always lives on the edge, by the way.
So I'm told. East of the Rockies, you're on the air with Dr. Snow. Where are you calling from, please?
Laramie, Wyoming.
Laramie, all right. Welcome to the show.
Thank you. This is a first-time call, and I'm very interested. Some of your program I don't get because you fade in and out in our area. But if this question has been addressed, I apologize. But my belief is that we bring into our world what we visualize. And if you have a lot of people visualizing these things coming about, will we bring them about in an untimely manner?
No, it's a very good question. In other words, Doctor, put another way, are we, in effect, creating our own future, or is it there and we are simply seeing it? Are we creating it or are we seeing it?
Well, I think it's sort of the question of a self-fulfilling prophecy or not.
Yes.
And I've heard this many times. My take on this is that when we started this research, which was 10, 15 years ago now, Dr. Wambach started it, no one in the public was talking about these things. And in fact, these were the incidents of literally hundreds of people quite independently that were coming up with this as the scenarios in their unconscious.
Well, I know, and, but are they sort of...
So now I see it as not so much that because people are talking about it, we're creating it, but in fact it is coming to light and people are becoming aware of it because it is coming so much closer to it. I personally feel that it's very important to look ahead so that you get a glimpse of what might be, and then you can make choices that are informed choices.
Mm.
See, I believe in information. That's my. I guess Helen Wambach said I have a research bump somewhere up there. I've looked for it. My wife hasn't found it yet, but we're still trying.
All right. West of the Rockies, you're on the air with Dr. Snow. Hi.
Thank you very much, Art. This is the sergeant of Star, Idaho, and I'm very... If I may make a quick comment and ask a question, please.
All right, go ahead.
My comment is, Art, I've been listening to you for a long time, and it's really wonderful to hear the format of your program change ever so slowly into something that covers many of the areas that we're covering tonight.
Yes.
And Dr. Snow, if I may ask you, you spoke about the benefit of meditation, and I am a practitioner of meditation and have been for a long time. I follow a form by the Maharishi, and
right.
I was wondering if there was any particular type of meditation that you suggest or could you expound a little bit more the benefits of for the entire planet?
All right, in about a minute, because that's all we've got.
Okay, persistency and consistency are the keys to making something successful in meditation. Obviously, having a high spiritual purpose. The mantra technique of the Maharishi is a very good one. I personally work with deep breathing and color visualization using the chakras or the energy center points. I call it transformational journeys, and I have an audio tape that does all of that that you can get through my P.O. box. There are many different ways to go in this, but persistency and consistency. In other words, find the method that works for you and be persistent in making it happen. That's the key to meditation.
And the benefits from it?
The benefits, of course, come in many different parts of your life. I find people who use my tape tell me that they have psychic development take place, that they have, I've had people tell me that their sleep patterns improve. A lot of people are having sleep trouble right now because of the energy changes that are going on. I have people tell me that their perception of what is happening in their life improves.
All right. On that note, we'll lay it down for the news here at the top of the hour and come back and lay heavily on the phones when we do. From an area near Dreamland, this is Dreamland.
From the Kingdom of Nye, we continue with your calls on Dreamland with Art Bell. Call Art now, toll-free at 1-800-618-8255. 1-800-618-TALK. First-time callers, area code 702-727-1222. 702-727-1222. Or the wildcard line at area code 702-727-1295. 727-1295 in the 702 area code. Now again, here's Art Bell.
Now again, here I am. My guest is Dr. Chet Snow, a doctorate in sociology and history. Not bad, huh? And he espouses, teaches past life regression, future life progression. It's all very interesting. And we're beginning to sort of get a meld now into prophecy, which I find very interesting in view of what near-term prophecy seems to be saying. I've got a new suggestion for you about what you can do with your old portable telephone. You know, those old... And he was watching a local television station tonight, reported at 10 o'clock Central Time on WBRC-TV in Birmingham. Scientists in Ohio are performing DNA testing on hair samples found in Washington State that are reportedly hair samples from Bigfoot. I'm following that a little bit lately. So they've actually got some hair samples, and they're looking at them. All right, back now to Dr. Snow. Are you there, Doctor?
Yes, sir.
Okay, good. There is a fellow named Bob up in Washington, KVI listener, who writes the following. Might as well give you the rough one first. Art, I haven't heard anything that this guy, meaning you,
said that convinces me. Assuming intelligent spirit beings are at work, they can mimic anything. Yes, even his mother or grandmother. How can he believe in something you cannot prove? How do you answer that?
Well, I would say that probably 95% of the human race has believed in something that couldn't be materially proven for an awfully long time, one way or another. We don't have any video of the cross, do we? But I don't want to get into that in jest. I think that what happens is that we all live through a series of experiences, and our experiences are what make up the reality pattern that we then live in. And then we test those experiences, don't we? And we test them against other things in our life. Does that make you a better person? Does your life go about better, etc.? Are you happier for the result of what's happening with you? And those are by the fruits. Okay. You know them. That's what it says.
Doctor, let's read between the lines of what he said here. Assuming intelligent spirit beings are at work, they can mimic anything. Yes, even his mother or grandmother. All right, read. I'll tell you how I read that. I read that as this is a Christian, a devout religious person, and what he's saying between the lines is, how do you know that wasn't some sort of evil spirit mimicking something or another? And that's what I'm sure of it. I bet you $1 million that's what he's saying.
Well, I don't know. I thank him for not going ahead and putting it into the evil connotation, because that's obviously a clear judgment and an opinion that I don't share.
But it is one many Christians share, though.
Well, all right. I'm not sure that they all do. My feeling on this, again, is the biblical statement is clear. Test these things, and by the fruits of what happens to you shall you know them. And I've tested them in my life. My life has improved. I have found not only comfort and interest, but something that has given me some new purpose and meaning. And frankly, if that is coming from an evil spirit, then I would say that the fruits of that are positive. So I don't believe it's evil.
Okay, well, I'm certainly not saying it is. I was simply...
No, but that really is the test that anyone who is a Christian, a true Christian, should follow. After all, write what it says in the New Testament about that.
Okay.
And, you know, I'm just putting that out there in the same vein, in the same light. So test anything. And I would say to someone who has a spiritual experience or spirit experiences or abduction experiences or whatever, test it against what happens in your life.
Good enough. East of the Rockies, you're on the air with Dr. Chet Snow. Where are you calling from, please?
Baton Rouge, Louisiana.
Welcome to the program.
Thank you very much. I caught you tonight in the last half hour.
Yes, sir.
And I understand, from what I understand, the doctor is in the, you said spirituality and history or sociology?
No, my degrees are in history and sociology. I later went back to school after the things that I was talking about earlier in the program occurred about 12 years ago in counseling, and I am actually a regression therapist, a person who helps other people to get in touch with their spiritual reality through what we call regression therapy.
Okay, well, that might have... I don't want to be off the topic here, but I heard a caller last half hour ask you something about chronic deja vu.
Right.
I wouldn't say chronic, but I've had many deja vu experiences. And another thing that I wanted to ask you about, if it's in this, in your field, is I've had, I guess you would call it, like telepathic projection experiences.
Okay.
All through my life, there's been several occasions with certain people that I seem to have a connection with, whereas I would be thinking about something, thinking about doing something or thinking about something, and somebody else would say it or suggest it right after I was thinking about it, although I wasn't, consciously trying to make them say it.
All right. That's very interesting. Do you believe it is possible to influence others with the power of the mind?
Oh, I think there's no doubt but what it's possible to influence others through the power of the mind. That's where some of this, stuff about evil spirits and things come from. A lot of it comes from human minds and the garbage that we inhabit. Now, I'm not saying that's true of this gentleman, Sometimes it may just be random thoughts, but if you're thinking them and you're on the same wavelength, if you're resonating on the same vibration as someone, especially someone that you may be close with or you know well, oftentimes I will find that people start a sentence that I will finish, or I will have finished it in my mind, and
mm-hmm.
that's what they said. That, as I say, usually shows that you have a certain vibrational resonance with that other person. Now, that's not any cause for alarm unless it becomes uncontrollable again. And then what I think you need to do is you need to sit down and begin to rethink what and your purpose is and who you are and you know, is it serving you? Is this doing something that's of a positive nature for you?
Well, you know, I really wish I agreed with you. When I look around the world now, and maybe I'm too close to the news and too close to events, but I see the deterioration, the evil aspect of human behavior, to be completely overwhelming the good. And that's a very dark thought, and I'm sorry I have it, but it's what I see.
Well, it may be true with people in the news profession. After all, you've kind of come along as frontline warriors and all of that stuff, and you have
that's
to
right.
listen to all the negative things. One of the things that people have been asking for a long time is, wouldn't it be good if some of the positive news that's going on in the world were given the same amount of play as all of the negative news?
Well, that would be nice, but then, you see, it's not news. And
well,
yet,
that's the problem, isn't it? It's how we've defined
that, it. That is a problem, but yet, Doctor, I see the news, and I've been watching it for 10 years, day in, day out, every single day. It is my profession.
Sure.
And I'm telling you, I see a steep downward curve in terms of social behavior
yep.
and dysfunctional behavior.
And of course, being a therapist and someone who works with people who have taken a step, obviously, toward self-healing, I see people coming toward greater and greater integration in themselves and in their lives. And so it's a very different perspective. One thing
it
I might
is.
Say, though, is that the darkness of the shadow, in part, depends on the brilliance of the light.
Fair enough. All right, let's go back to the phones. West of the Rockies, you're on the air with Dr. Snow. Hi.
Hello.
Hello.
How are you?
Fine. Where are you?
I'm calling from Gardena.
All right. Very good. Listening to, I bet, KOGO.
Yes, I am.
All right.
I had bought a book yesterday, and I don't know if you've read it or not, called The Ultimate Deception.
I have to admit I've not.
Nope, nor
have
I. Oh,
very interesting book. Everybody should definitely read this book. It's written by a retired military officer who is anonymous.
Mm-hmm.
And I was listening to your Coast to Coast program on KBC, I believe it was either Thursday or Friday.
In Los Angeles, yes.
Yes, and you were talking about the eruptions of Mount Pelee and Mount Vesuvius.
Yes.
Well, in here, there was a gentleman back in 1954 who has spoken with this, he claims to be from another planet,
mm-hmm.
and he goes by the name of Val Thor.
Oh, yes.
And he had made a prediction in here. He said that there would be a major land change in Southern California, and he said that 90 days before this would occur, the volcanoes of Mount Pelee and Mount Vesuvius would erupt.
Are you sure you're not talking about Etna and Vesuvius?
No, it says Mount Pelee and no. Mount Vesuvius.
Well, let me jump in here, because
right.
you don't need an alien to tell you this. Edgar Casey made a public pronouncement to that effect as a prophecy in 1936.
All right.
Public, and was published, so it doesn't have to come out of the mouth of an alien.
Well, again, and I said this earlier, and I'm going to say it again, individual guests are one thing, but collectively I've got guests who are saying just about exactly the same thing, and that, more than anything else, unnerves me. It, this collective prophecy of near-term changes. Now, in concert with that, Dale in Gig Harbor says about what I know you would say. He says, you keep thinking, Art, of the upcoming changes, especially the massive deaths, as being negative, something to be afraid of and put off as long as possible. You ought to know better. If it were not for these, our world would become a horrible one-world tyranny within 20 to 30 years. I look forward to them and welcome them. And you feel about that way, don't you, Doctor?
I don't say that I look forward to them and welcome them any more than I would look forward to, you know, having to have heart surgery or something and welcoming it. I see that at least some of this is a necessity that we're going into. I still feel we have the possibility of mitigating some of these changes so that human life doesn't... that the Earth and we human bacteria, we're like bacteria to the Earth, right? We need bacteria in our stomach, and yet if we get too much of it, what happens? We vomit. We have to get rid of some of it. So not to say that everybody is like that, but there's something about that in terms of the Earth itself, and I think we're coming to realize that we can't just keep going. It will not just be bigger, better, use more resources and let technology solve it all. There are limits to these things, and we're coming near those limits.
You and many others put it in such a way that it's palatable. But to me, the message is, and people really should understand what you're saying when you're talking about these changes, it will mean millions of people dying. It will mean land masses literally disappearing, perhaps new ones forming. Earth changes of a magnitude. I mean, you know, you attach nice words to it, but I guess I look at it in a very human, pragmatic, non-spiritual way, and I see mass death.
Well, I think that if from a purely materialist point of view, that there's something to what you say, and I won't argue against it. You know, I am very much a pragmatist and a researcher and an information seeker. I guess I was looking into these things, as I say, 10, 12 years ago when this started to go on in my own life. And my feeling about that, though, is that these are things that are coming, but they don't have to come in the worst-case scenario. So if I can help people to adjust even to the saving of one life, I will feel mine wasn't in vain.
Do you recall your use of the word harvesting?
Yes, I do. It's in my book, Mass Dreams of the Future. That was actually given to me in one of the sessions by what I'll call a spiritual being. I really don't know who it was. It might have been one of those deceivers that fellow that you feel was from the Christian right was talking about.
Well,
it
might have
been an ultimate deception. I don't know. That was what I was told, that we're going through a graduation or harvesting period.
All right. Could you substitute rapture?
Well, some people feel that, yes. That's another word. We have lots of these words. We want to put words on things. There's a whole talk of what is called the photon belt now, and are going through a new kind of part of space and consciousness that's going to make time accelerate even more than it does today, to the point that everything will sort of be all light or all darkness or all stop. Well, the same thing without the words was being developed in the 60s, and Dr. Wambach was receiving this kind of information in the 70s, and again, in Mass Dreams of the Future, we go into discussion of that. So these are not new concepts. They've been around.
All right, Doctor, hold it right there. We'll be right back to you. Hey, you don't have to put up with it. I know a lot of you do, but you don't have to. What am I talking about? Hard water. Hard water spots on glassware, windows in your car. That crusty ring in your shut snow back. Doctor, you've got a bunch of videotapes and a book and all the rest of it, so tell them how to get it.
All right. My post office box is 1738 in Sedona, Arizona, 86339. My book is $18. The Transformational Journeys audio tape is $12. The two of them together, $28, post-paid, all the, you know, arrangements and everything taken care of.
Right.
And anyone who wants information, please send me a self-addressed stamp envelope. I'll send you information about these topics and also about our Association of Past Life Therapists around the United States. Plus, I have a new prophecy video which will be coming out in December, and anyone interested in that, please also send me a self-addressed stamp envelope, and I will send you information as soon as we have it. I don't have a price list on the video, but for the book and the tape, the two of them together, $28, give you a couple dollars off. Individually, the book is $18, Mass Dreams of the Future, and the tape, Transformational Journeys, which goes into all of these meditation techniques and includes a future progression experience that you can do in your own home for $12. All to box 1738, Sedona, Arizona, 86339. and make checks payable to Dr. Chet, C-H-E-T, Snow, just like what you ski on.
All right.
All right. Get that out of the way. I want to come back just for a second, Art, because I think one of the things that what I'm you're kind of dancing around and other people on this is, are there any solutions? That's the real crux of the matter here. Are there any solutions to this? Well,
I don't know
if there are any physical solutions,
Doctor,
to Earth changes.
We're at the bottom of the hour, and so we'll be right back, and I'll let you answer it. For my part, in the old days, you remember the High and Mighty? The point of no return? I think it's been passed. But that's the dark side. We'll be back.
Dreamland's weekly news segments by Linda Moulton Howe, which features updates about mysterious phenomena, then you might want to know more about her books and documentaries. Linda Howe is an Emmy Award-winning television producer, writer, and researcher of Earth mysteries linked to non-human intelligences. Her books and videos provide scientific data and first-hand eyewitnesses. Linda Moulton Howe's two books, An Alien Harvest and Glimpses of Other Realities, are acclaimed for their quality, depth, photographs, and drawings. If you are interested in learning more about the mysterious animal mutilations, crop circles, UFO sightings, the human abduction syndrome, and government knowledge about these worldwide phenomena, you will enjoy these books and videos, available directly from LMH Productions. You can dial 1-800-707-9993 to order. That's 1-800-707-9993.
All right, let me stay in my cynical mode for a moment. There was a movie that I saw when I was very young called The High and Mighty. And it was a particularly well-done drama about an airplane crossing the Atlantic. These were prop planes, and these were the days when you had so much fuel on board. Only so much fuel. And somewhere around mid-Atlantic, a little red light would come on in the cockpit, and that red light would mean, when it came on, that you had passed the point of no return. In other words, whatever happens, you no longer have enough fuel to go back where you were. You can only go on to your destination or some other landing point. In that case, of course, going to Europe, Dr. Snow's done that many times, back and forth and back and forth. You can only go on to the other side. And the analogy I'm giving you all and Dr. Snow is the darker one. I think that humanity's little red light popped on some time ago, Doctor.
Okay, can I interject there?
Absolutely.
I want to make a sort of prophecy on this.
All right.
For your listeners. I think that the little red light will go on in 1996 if one of these four events takes place. I'm not saying they will take place, but this is why I like to say to people, look at the sequence. There will, if there is a major quake, earthquake in India or near India, if the Pope dies or has an incapacitating stroke that he is no longer in charge of the Roman Catholic Church, if the right wing takes over the government in Israel, or if the Islamic fundamentalists take over the government in Turkey. If one of those four things happen, Art, I agree with you.
I'm sorry, but again, from the cynical side, all of the things you just mentioned are more probable than not. All four of them.
I'll wait for the jury, because that those are for me, from my knowledge of prophecy and from the research that I've done and the listening to other people, as you say, like Gordon Michael Skyen and Lori Toy and the other prophets at our prophecy conference, and we're going to have another one next year in Phoenix, I believe. All of that brings me to those points. If those types of things happen, and those are very specific ones, then you're absolutely right. Then what do we do? And I want to talk just for a minute, 1 minute, about some possible solutions that may surprise you, Art, because I think that one of the first things that we have to think about doing and this is a real key one, is we've got to start downsizing government. We've got to start building self-reliant communities. We've got to start learning from native peoples. And finally, and this is maybe my part, we've got to start doing collective spiritual work.
May I surprise you, or maybe not, that I absolutely agree with you. And it can only be done one person at a time. And I'm
doing my own part.
I'm trying to be as independent as possible. I've been doing this now for some time.
Absolutely.
However, my observation remains unchanged. I think the little red light already went on. I think the course is clear. East of the Rockies, you're on the air with Dr. Chet Snow. Hi.
Yeah, I was wanting to ask you about this.
Turn your radio off, first of
all. Okay, hold on.
All right, well, everybody's got to do that right away, so I have your radio handy. We have a delay, and otherwise it will confuse you. All right, where are you, sir?
Okay, I'm in Roswell, New Mexico.
Roswell, all right.
Yeah. Yeah, I was kind of saying, you know, since everybody seems to be coming off with this doomsday approach, you know, today, you know, I'm thinking we might have a more exciting time and a better time.
It's an adventure. Remember that we all chose at some level of spirit or soul to be here for this particular ride. I think that, as I say, you know that my point of view is not as perhaps gloomy as Mr. Bell's at the moment,
right.
but I think that there are things that we can do to help mitigate these and also to prepare. I mean, you got to do both at the same time. Self-reliance is a key thing, what's called downsizing, learning how to do certain things that we've kind of given up doing anymore. You might tune into your grandparents if they're still around, they're not, some other people who know how to do certain basic things alike.
All right. Well, everybody talks about downsizing, Doctor, and all I see is government getting bigger and bigger and bigger.
But whose fault is that ultimately? Isn't it ours?
It's Bill Clinton's fault.
Okay. That's nice. Play it on one guy. Hey, we all in ancient Greece, we called those scapegoats.
No, I retract it. Government growth is a self-fulfilling prophecy, Doctor.
You haven't gotten out of working for the government. I think I agree with you.
Government to sustain itself, much like actually communism, to sustain itself, had to expand. Because otherwise the economy, you know, without expansion, the economy, which it did finally, because we kept them reined in, collapsed in on itself. That is true, I believe, of any government entity, and ours is no exception. That's fine. I'll let you be the good guy, the positive thinker, and I'm going to sit here and be the hard, cold, bitten realist, I'm afraid. East of the Rockies, you're on the air with Dr. Snow. Hi.
How are you doing? I'm calling from El Paso.
El Paso, Texas. Yes, sir.
Yes, Dr. Snow, I guess you're sincere in what you're saying. I'm not going to say that it's all a scam to sell your stuff, but I think you're sincere, but I wish you would really examine your views on this, and a lot of it I think is really nonsense. So many things that you said are just don't make sense.
All right,
it really scares people a lot.
If anybody's scaring people, it's me, not Dr. Snow.
No, I think he's doing it too, with his prediction of the earthquakes and so on.
Really?
Yeah, just doomsday. There's been doomsday prophets from, you know, for 5,000 years or more, and we need to get away from that. I'd like to ask if there a deadline, and I'd ask you this, of all these prophets, is there a deadline after which these predictions will not take place, and will they come back and apologize to everyone and say, well, we're sorry that these predictions were wrong, like, you know, December 31, 1995?
Well, he is not saying that they're absolute. So I doubt that you would get that from him, although he did give us a date. Doctor, you said in 96 to 98.
That's correct. As far as these were the visions that were given that I had 12, 15 years ago, whenever that was, in 1983 and 84, I also had them out the mid-1990s and seeing the great weather changes and the weather going to the extremes. The main talk of political things had to do with the Yugoslavian Civil War. I also saw some things having to do with what I was calling the Soviet Union that don't seem to be taking place. So I think that in any case, these scenarios are being seen by more than one person. none of it is 100% accurate. I would be, you know, the last person to say that it is written in stone or in concrete. My whole work for 12 years has been to help people, in my opinion, in the way that I can do it, to begin to change their lives individually, to work better for them, and by doing that, hopefully, I feel, add some light to a situation which, regardless of whether we talk about it or not, is something that's happening.
Well, consistent with my theme tonight, somebody sent me a bumper sticker that I really love by fax. Due to present economic difficulties, the light at the end of the tunnel has been turned off.
All right.
East of the Rockies, you're on the air with Dr. Chet Snow. Hello.
Hi, I'm calling from Houston.
Houston, yes,
sure.
Ma'am.
I've got a question for Chet.
All right.
It says in some reading I've done on Edgar Cayce that the possibility exists that when he would tap into something, it was just a human subconscious pool. Is that what's mainly going on here? Because if the batting average were like batting 1,000, so to speak, then that would be a different pool, wouldn't you say?
Well, Edgar Cayce was tapping into a higher self, or he called it the source, and he definitely identified it as being connected to himself, but also at some higher level. You know, Jung talked about a collective unconscious, that we all share certain information that goes beyond what we know consciously. So I think this isn't just collective consciousness of human beings. I think there's more at stake here, and what I have seen with people who are working, you know, literally as prophets, I think that they are in touch with some other forms of intelligence. Whether or not then you want to go and judge those as positive or negative, again, comes back to the fruits of it, how it operates to help you. But these are wake-up calls. All prophecy is a wake-up call. It's not to make it happen. It's to help you understand why it might happen, and then, just as in the Bible, help you to do something to keep it from happening. And again, I can't feel like Art does it. It's all over. I think we're still got a fighting chance, and I'll probably feel that way. And you know, until I go under in the earthquake.
Well,
if that's what's
really
supposed to happen.
I didn't say it's all over. The trip is not finished. All I said was, I think the red light has blinked on.
Okay. I think there are things, though, as I say again, we can do about this, and we are starting to do about this, and maybe your show is one of those catalysts. That's why I think it's a privilege to be on it.
Mm-hmm. Well, I'm glad you're here. East of the Rockies, you're on the air with Dr. Chet Snow. Where are you calling from, please?
Columbia, Missouri.
Good. Welcome to the show. You're on the air.
I wanted to ask Dr. Snow and yourself, on this quickening, is there some source where we can get a chronology of quickening events like earthquakes, volcanoes?
Yes, sir. They are available from many, many sources. And what you can do is go to USGS. You can study the number of six point plus earthquakes. You can look at the activity of volcanoes around the world right now. You might look to the record of hurricanes this year, predicted by Mr. Scallion, I might say, very accurately. You might look at the present condition generally of the Ring of Fire. You might look at current social conditions, and you don't have to be Einstein to read the number of doctors. Stand by a second. To read the number of stories about mothers putting their children in ovens and throwing them out of windows while on crack trips. You might look at the world economic situation, our present debt load, where that's going economically. You pick the area, sir. Is there one specific compilation of chronology of these events? No. These are simple observations that I've been making doing this show for as long as I have. We'll be 98:30. There used to be, again, sticking with my dark theme this evening, there used to be an expression, honor among thieves. And it's something I pointed to earlier. There have always been murderers. There have always been evildoers. But in today's world, I note that, there was a day when somebody would go into a convenience store or a store and rob the store and back out and take the money and run, hoping not to get caught. Today's thief, more times than not, goes in, takes the money, and for no discernible reason, or just to, many times they will say, just to know what it feels like to kill, put a bullet through the owner. Human behavior has changed. Life has cheapened. And this is not imaginary, Doctor. It is real.
No, I never said it was, Art. And in part, that may well be that we're... So many of people today have grown up with all of the violence on the media and also the sort of comic book-like characteristic of death. And it's become sort of common. And the other thing is that most people don't have real death in their families anymore very often. That's a strange thing. We all used to live with our grandparents growing old and dying in our house.
Yes.
And we don't do that anymore.
We are.
And we shove them off into retirement centers.
We are disconnected.
And so that disconnection process, it's inevitable almost that it's going to bring out in some people these dark sides. And in effect, both things are happening at once. We're being subjected to tremendous amounts of violence that aren't real because they're just on a television screen. They're not real. How many people see real blood? It's not a pleasant sight when you're really in it. I agree entirely with that.
It is true. All right, back to the lines east of the Rockies. You're on the air with Dr. Snow. Hi.
Hi, Art. This is Dave from Cape Coral, Florida. How you doing?
Hi, Dave. Cape Coral, Florida. Huh? Get good and close to your phone.
Okay. I was wondering if you could tell us, I've heard stories that Abraham Lincoln foresaw his own death and that Lincoln and Kennedy's assassinations and deaths had a lot of similarities. Can you tell us anything about that?
All right. Do a lot of people foresee their own death?
Oftentimes, people of that kind of stature, Lincoln was a very spiritual man and had a lot of connections, and he did have a vision, apparently. The interesting thing is he didn't really recognize himself in the vision. And again, I would say that he didn't take any particular action on it. So he was given what you might be called a warning, and he didn't do anything. And therefore, he went ahead in the line of fate or what destiny or whatever took him down the road that he went. His death and Kennedy's had some similarities, of course, in their effect on the country. The fact that they were both elected in an even year, the 1860 and 1960, they're 100 years apart, in other words, and that both of them were very contested within their own party before they were first elected. So, and they had, as I say, a tremendous impact in their life, and then particularly in the fact of their death.
All right. West of the Rockies, you're on the air with Dr. Snow. Hi.
Hi, this is Jim calling from Portland, Oregon.
Hi, Jim.
Yes, I'd like to say to your guest, I think he's very wrong about ghosts.
Okay.
In what sense?
Well, I have the luxury to wander the spirit realms when I sleep, so I get to see what's going on in the spirit world. And these spirit realms coexist with physical places on the earth, and I see the spirits there. And they are conscious, living entities. They're not some kind of recording.
Or image of an entity, rather a soul.
Yes, actually, the spirit world on the earth is a very organized...
Well, I believe, if I remember correctly, Dr. Snow said there are both, and I've had several people say that.
Correct.
Do you want to reaffirm that?
Yes, correct. I was not saying that all spirits are simply recordings. I was saying that the ones that we perceive of as being ghosts are those that, in a sense, it's something that gets stuck. I do not believe, however, that getting stuck then takes the entire life, spiritual energy of the individual and keeps that individual there forever and ever type of thing.
Hmm.
The main force goes on into the light and then on from there. But part of it is remaining, and then we see that like a tape loop, as I said.
All right. One quick call, I think. That's all we're going to have time for. First time caller line, you're on the air with Dr. Snow.
Yeah, how you doing?
I'm doing fine, sir.
I got one thing for you, Dr. Snow. You know, he uses parts of the Bible. I'm a born again Christian myself, and when he talked about testing the spirits, you know, he needs to go on. It says, "Try the spirits to see if they are of God," for many false, you know, prophets have gone out. But
well, I have no problem with that.
Well, okay. And for the end times, you know, if people would look to the Bible, even Matthew 24 and even in 2 Timothy.
All right, we don't Bible quote, but...
Well, I'm not perhaps of his political or, you know, religious persuasion entirely, but yes, I have studied all of that. It is in my book, Mastering to the Future. Most of that I do feel has some basis in fact, And in fact, I think that the one of the most positive and wonderful aspects of these changes are that they will lead us into a world in which there will be a return of something we can, you can call the Christ force if you wish, other people may call it the Buddha force or whatever, but there will be the return of some spiritual consciousness of God to the earth and to a very changed world. And so I think that that's a positive part.
Well, there are positives, and for as negative as I've been all the way through this program, there are positives, and one of them was that photograph, or the set of photographs I saw the other day. Dr. Snow, we are out of time.
Can I give my P.O. Box, 1738?
Very quickly,
in
yeah.
Sedona, 86339. The book is called Math Dreams of the Future, and the tape is Transformational Journey. Send me a self-addressed stamped envelope if you want information.
Doctor,
thank you very much.
Thank you, and good night. I would say one of the better evidences of creation that I have seen are the two photographs taken courtesy of Hubble. Paid for Hubble all the way, as far as I'm concerned. We do have them available for download. It's free. Absolutely free. Call our bulletin board service if you like it. Area code 702-727-1709. See what you say. See what you see is what I meant to say. It's kind of like a galaxy-wide Rorschach test. From the high desert, ladies and gentlemen, good night.
This has been Dreamland, a program dedicated to an examination of areas in the human experience not easily nor neatly put in a box. Things seen at the edge of vision, awakening a part of the mind as yet not mapped. Yet things every bit as real as the air we breathe but don't see. Please join us again next week at this time for Dreamland.